Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 3:18 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is June 8th. And today, initial jobless claims in the USA broke out on the upside. Now, we can see from the longer-term chart that because of the enormous spike in 2020, it's practically impossible to see what's happening. But I think it's important to just have a look at what it looks like without that spike. So we can see that from the spike higher in 2008, where we had as many as 600,000 people a month losing their jobs, and all the way through until March, or I guess it was really the end of March 2009. After that, unemployment and number of people claiming jobless declined pretty steadily for all of that time. So a full decade of declining jobless figures. And then they went down into record low territory. Now, arguably, it would have been reasonable at that point to say that it was time to start raising interest rates and that it was time to normalize policy. But that didn't happen. And we persisted with successive rounds of quantitative easing. So that brought us all the way down to jobless figures that were around 200,000, which is way below what it had been historically. Of course, then we had the pandemic. So all of that looked like nonsense because 6 million people lost their jobs. But then let's just simply zoom in on what this looks like over the last year, because it's definitely breaking on the upside. And obviously, we had the clear decline in the number of jobless all the way through 2021. But that was a very well-defined base formation. And we had the bottom in September of 2022. Since then, there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows, and it broke on the upside in here today. Now, we have not yet seen a meaningful tick higher in unemployment, but it is likely. And you can't simply have jobless numbers breaking on the upside without there being a meaningful change in the number of people unemployed as well. Well, I think it is reasonable to conclude that you can't really have a recession without the number of people losing their jobs increasing. And that does now appear to be unfolding. And we can also then just pay attention. I think this is the time to pay particular attention to the yield curve spread, where it is still contracting. So this is continuing to support asset prices. That is, despite the fact that in a recessionary environment, it would be reasonable to expect that company profits would decline simply because there are more people unemployed, spending power, appetite for risk declines, but we're not seeing that in the performance of the large cap companies just yet. So the Nasdaq today was up 1%. And that is pricing in the most benign of all possible scenarios, which is that inflation evaporates and subsequently corporate profits are in no way affected, and that interest rates come back down. We go back into the long duration outperformance of growth that characterized the market all the way up to the peak in late 2021 and early 2022. And we certainly have an overbought condition. So there's clearly the potential that we're going to see some additional downside despite the strength that we've seen in here today. Now, Microsoft was posting a downside weekly key reversal yesterday. It was a little bit steadier in here today. There's still plenty of room for downside follow through tomorrow. And Apple, having pulled back immediately after the announcement of its AR VR glasses, was also in positive territory in here today and pushing back above the $180 level. Now, it's obviously relevant for the Nasdaq when the largest companies are steadier. So it hasn't quite yet broken down from this little short-term range, but that's not at all beyond the bounds possibility either. Now, I think it's particularly interesting as well, that there was speculation early today that Iran and the USA were going to come to an agreement, and the oil price declined very quickly and pulled right back down below the $75 level. Then that speculation was dismissed by the USA, so prices started to move back upwards again. But what it also helps to highlight is just how finely balanced the market is. We've had prices ranging between 70 and about $85 now for most of the last 6 months. Anytime there is even a hint that supply might increase or that economic growth might wane, prices decline. When there is speculation that supply might decrease or economic activity might improve, prices advance. And we're still locked in what is a declining amplitude in terms of the range, because now it's really more like a range between about $72 and $78. When it breaks out, then it's going to be a dynamic move. And we still have the sequence of lower rally highs, and that hasn't been quite broken yet. So, obviously, then the bigger question here is what's going to happen in terms of the global economy? Are we going to see that there's going to be a round of stimulus from China? Are they going to try and support the economy and support the property market? And so far, the appetite for a lot of support has been pretty tepid. So the renminbi was a little stronger in here today. I think that was really more about dollar weakness than any particular renminbi strength. The dollar is rolling over in the region of the 200-day moving average. If jobless figures are rising, it's reasonable to anticipate that the peak of the interest rate cycle is not all that far away. Even if they were to raise rates in July, then the betting in the market right now is that it's very likely that will be the last hike. And if that is the case, then the chances are that interest rates will be coming down in future. And particularly with a recession brewing, that stimulus will increase. And that is helping to support gold. It's still in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming for the last 3 months. And it was in positive territory today by about $25. So it unwound the downward move that we saw yesterday, and it's holding the lower side of this range. What it needs to do is to string a few days on the upside to really confirm that support has been found beyond the very short term. I've been of the view this continues to look like a broad consolidation in the region of the big psychological $2,000 level. Gold prices have been going sideways for the last 3 years. It's a very well-defined range. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. We tend to be conditioned by the range to not expect explosive moves on the upside, but that is generally what breakouts look like. So when it does break, it's going to break in a dynamic manner. And this is an ideal location for support to be found in order for the trend to be reasonably consistent. And then silver prices were also in positive territory today and up in a fairly dynamic manner, pushing onto a new recovery high, pushing back up through the $24 level, holding the sequence of higher major reaction lows, finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this does look like a clear recovery candidate, and it lends credence to the view that the consolidation that we are seeing in gold is a consolidation and not a top formation. And then let's think about platinum. So the price has been ranging around the $1,000 level for most of the last couple of years. And it popped above it earlier this year. And now down 10 today, so not performing in line with the precious metals, and perhaps more characteristic of weaker activity that we've seen within the industrial metals. When we think about some of those better performing miners, Glencore was in negative territory today. It is hovering here above the 400p level. If the trend is going to remain consistent, then 400 will hold. Now, there's a big question underway about how successful are they going to be in acquiring tech resources. And this, I think, really helps to highlight the power of the green movement. Tech has a plan to split itself off from its coal assets. And Glencore has a similar type of plan. They want to acquire all of Teck and then fold their coal assets into Glencore's coal assets. But institutional Canadian investors don't want to own any kind of coal, and they definitely don't want to end up owning Glencore. Well, with the fires that are going on right now in Ontario and Quebec, then the chances are that the ambivalence towards owning any kind of coal asset is only going to increase. What is also, I think, rather interesting here is that the lithium price, which had really collapsed for a good 4 or 5 months, coming down from 600,000 to about 150,000 or 160,000. Well, it has rebounded. That's confirming support in the region of the upper side of the base formation. And it puts a low of at least near term, I think really more like medium term significance under the price. Now, I don't think that means that the price is going all the way back up to 600,000 anytime soon. But it does suggest that a higher plateau has been found, that prices will be higher for longer, and that is generally positive for the lithium mining sector. And I think it's also relevant that when the air quality in cities like Boston or New York or Philadelphia are approaching those of cities in India or China, well, then that is going to refocus minds on renewable energy. Allkem has popped on the upside and is firming here in the region of the upper side of the range of the all-time highs. And then the lithium ETF seems to have a very similar pattern to Lithium Americas. Lithium Americas is splitting itself up, and they're going to separate their Argentinian business, which are majority controlled by, or at least where the supply coming out of the mines goes to China. And they have a joint venture with Tianqi Lithium. So what they're doing is splitting up the company, and they're going to focus the US operation, the North American operation, on the Thacker Pass mine, and they expect to get full government funding in order to build it. So the share is steady, at least in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And Albemarle has a rather similar pattern overall, where it is firming in the region of its lows, but doing probably a better job of it in the short term. Then, when we think about the oil price, well, it does generally tend to have an effect on the renewable energy sector, but so do interest rates. And one of the reasons why solar hasn't done better over the last 18 months is because interest rates have been rising. And there are two basic business models within the solar sector. One is the lease model, and they install in the hope that then they will have a long-term customer that will pay back the cost of installation, and that's where their profit will come from once that has been done. Well, those are very interest rate sensitive business models. And then, of course, you have those that manufacture them. So in the manufacturing sector, there is a price war going on. That's not going to be great news for ex-China manufacturers. So First Solar has experienced some pretty big moves. We've had dynamic moves on both the upside and the downside, and that uptick in single stock volatility is not particularly comforting. It absolutely needs to hold the sequence of higher major reaction lows and the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, when we then look around the world, well, let's first just look at what's happening in terms of the bond market. The 10-year yield in the USA was up yesterday, down today. Not down quite as much, but not pushing on the upside either. And this is also a very finely balanced market. The yield has been bobbing around here in a pretty much a 50 basis point band for most of the last 6 months. And it's all about the question of whether inflation is under control and how high are interest rates likely to go, and what is the likelihood that a recession will be required to get inflation under control. That is putting downward pressure at the moment on yields, but also on the dollar. Well, a weaker dollar is something that should help to encourage flow into emerging markets. So the Mexico ETF remains in an uptrend, and Mexico is likely to be among the biggest beneficiaries of either nearshoring, reshoring, or China plus one manufacturing strategies. Then the Indian market was in mildly negative territory in here today, and it's pausing in the region of that all-time peak from back in December. But sentiment in India among consumers is improving. The perception of whether inflation is under control or not is also improving, and that's helping the rupee to steady. And it's been holding the 83 level now for at least the last 7 or 8 months. So if it can sustain a move to new rally highs, which would be a break in the sequence of the dollar's higher reaction lows, then that would really ignite interest in India. It's the brief periods of time where the Indian rupee actually breaks its downtrend for a while. That generally tends to be among the best time to own Indian stocks for a momentum move. It's when they start devaluing the currency again that the Indian market tends to underperform. Then let's think about Australia. Well, the ASX was in negative territory in here today. The RBA is still raising interest rates, and that's putting upward pressure on the currency. And obviously, then the Australian market is both exposed to the domestic property market, but then also exports to China, and just how strong is the Chinese economy going to be? Obviously, we're still in an environment for the wider China market, where there's a big focus on semiconductors in Taiwan, and the TAIEX index was in negative territory today. It's probably going to bounce tomorrow on the back of strength in Wall Street in here today. But I do think that the artificial intelligence question, it's very promising, but a lot of it has been priced in very quickly. Now, of course, all depending on how long these fires last and what that means for the air quality in a large swathe of North America. Is there, I wonder, the possibility that data centers are not going to have the kind of air quality they require in order to run in an efficient manner, or will equipment be damaged because of the particulate matter that is getting sucked into cooling systems? So it's certainly something to just bear in mind, because the broken windows economic model would mean that if these things get damaged, then they would have to be replaced, and that would generate fresh orders for companies like Taiwan Semiconductor. And then if we think about the semiconductors index, it's quite similar that we had this big pop on the upside, and certainly there is a pause underway right now. Even in an environment where we do have tightening liquidity conditions. There are going to be more bullish stories around. So, for example, Biogen is on the cusp, it appears, of getting fuller FDA approval for its Alzheimer's drug. So there's been exceptional volatility in the share over the last 7 years, and it's been really up and down like a yo-yo. But it is firming from the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 8 or 9 months, and today was a reasonably dynamic move. And then its partner in developing Alzheimer's drugs, Eisai, was the best performer on the Nikkei. And it is now pushing back up towards the upper side of the range that's been forming since 2015. Now, the Nikkei is overbought in the short term, and it does look likely that we're going to get some pause of consolidation. That was a good size move yesterday. It fulfilled the technical definition of a downside Q reversal, and it did follow through on the downside in here today. So it does suggest a peak of at least near-term significance, and then the scope at least for a reversion back down towards that 30,000 level and a testing of the upper side of the underlying range. Think a lot will depend on what happens in terms of the yen, and the yen was a little stronger in here today. So then the question, of course, is do investors think that Japan will persist with their yield curve control? Will if they continue to get a stronger currency, I think it's more likely than not. A good part of the reason for ensuring that they are, I guess, of ensuring that the JGB yield does not exceed 50 basis points is to support the export market. And the weakness of the yen has certainly been a factor in enhancing the export sector's competitiveness. So it looks like some of the more extended trends around the world do look like they are going to be unwound. And then let's just look at some of the individual stocks like Nvidia, where it was down in a fairly dynamic manner yesterday and then recouped some of that in here today. And then Google had a is another company that had a large downside key reversal yesterday, and then it did not rally in here today. What I'm sensing is that we do have overbought conditions, and it is more likely than not that they're going to be unwound. And then the bigger question will be, are we going to see further economic weakness coming through in statistics over the course of the summer? We are in a less favorable time for markets, and it does look likely that short-term overbought conditions are going to be unwound. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.